Welcome back, everyone. We've got an hour to spend with British author Tim Good. He knows a heck of a lot about UFOs and government conspiracies and cover-ups. And, you know, we started this evening by discussing the passion that Coast to Coast listeners have for the show. Well, show me how much you care about it. Put your thinking caps on. Ask some good questions of Tim. Because he's here, and he's here for you. We're going to go to the wild card line, Jim in Pennsylvania. Jim, what's on your mind?
Yeah, George, good evening.
Listen, good evening.
I would like to revisit your question to your guest in regards to our being able to shoot down technically advanced, or I should say technologically advanced craft. And I have a theory on this, and I'd like to bring your guest's considerable expertise to bear on what I think is actually happening.
Okay.
I believe that we do not have the capability to shoot these craft out of the sky, and that what's happening is that we're more or less being swatted aside like flies or mosquitoes. And this is why we're having all of these crashes and such like that. And what's happened is that ever since that we developed, since we entered the very beginnings of our technological age, that we somehow attracted the attention of various different species. And they discovered that we have some kind of resource that they want, and I believe that there's a competition going on amongst different species, and they're shooting each other out of the sky.
Jim?
Yes?
I agree with every word.
Good.
Absolutely spot on.
So, Tim, you don't believe that we have the technological capability of shooting any of them down?
I don't think so. You know, they have the ability to travel either through time or another dimension or have broken the light barrier. If they're going to share that technology with us, they certainly would have shared a lot more than they already have. I don't think that we're ready for it, and I think they have the intelligence to recognize that.
However, Jim, I do think we have acquired some technology which is being put to use in the weapons field to deal with
that
some
I agree with,
craft.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely do agree that there is some technology that we have acquired.
And have you considered that we might be getting help from some species who are concerned? Because, as I said in my last book, I mean, unfortunately, which wasn't published in the States, I sent George a copy, Unearthly Disclosure. The whole theme of the book was that there is a conflict on this Earth between, not just between us and some species, but between the species, the alien species themselves. And this
I completely agree with you 100%.
And I've got a lot of evidence for that from reliable people who've actually witnessed various incidents of that nature in a number of countries. So I think that is another part of the problem. But I agree with you. Everything else you said, absolutely. We haven't got a chance in heaven of knocking out some of these craft. They just swat us down like mosquitoes, as you say, if needs be, and they have done so on hundreds of occasions.
Jim, thank you very much for a good point and a good comment. We're going to the east of the Rockies line. Brian in New York is up mighty early this morning, or mighty late, I should say. Brian, what do you got?
Yeah, I had a question basically about if these people are as advanced as they are, my first idea would be that to get this far out into space and that technologically advanced, they'd probably have to be able to work together and, you know, not fighting amongst themselves. But what I don't understand is why our governments of the world, seeing this technology, haven't gotten together for, A, either to see, they've seen the advances that can happen, and that, you know, pooling all of our resources, we could get to that level and, you know, cure cancers and feed everybody, or B, if they're hostile, you know, wouldn't we have a much better chance pulling our governments together to fight them if they are this advanced? And just the idea that they're out there is just such a phenomenal idea that, you know, that would, I would think, precede any concerns over religious, you know, consequences. Let them get it over with.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you up to a point, Brian. Certainly, I believe that there has been collaboration between governments. Certainly. For example, President Gorbachev confirmed that at the Geneva summit in 1985, he and President Reagan agreed that the Soviet Union and the United States would collaborate in the event of an extraterrestrial attack. That is officially confirmed, that statement. So there was collaboration. I don't know. It doesn't look very good at the moment. Collaboration with with Russia, but certainly there has been collaboration. This is confirmed by a lot of scientists, and it's not generally known. I mean, this is officially now confirmed that in 1977, President Andropov of the Soviet Union set up the top secret. It was called Institute 22. That was the code name for a top secret UFO research project that involved 4 million military personnel, as well as probably a million or so civil servants. It was classified, highly classified. It lasted at least 10 years, and this has been confirmed by many military and scientific personnel. And the details of that are in my book. And I think that there has to be collaboration between the major powers, certainly the nuclear powers, on this subject. But at the same time, there's always, the sort of basic nature of humanity, competitive politics, wanting to get the upper hand and to take advantage of other countries on this planet.
Just to add about Institute 22, I'm more than familiar with
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, you did great work, George. Sorry to interrupt. You did
no, that's okay.
A lot of your research is actually mentioned in my book, as you will, I hope, have noted.
Indeed, yeah. We were the ones that were able to dig up the first documents about Institute 22 back in 1993,
yes.
And you're absolutely right. There was an incident that was mentioned, and also it mentioned in your book about a. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Brian, but it's an incident that happened at a Ukrainian military ICBM base where UFOs hovered over the base and basically disabled the missiles. And it was almost like sending a message that these may be your most powerful weapon systems, but they don't mean squat to us.
Absolutely.
Brian, thank you for your question. We're going to go to our first-time caller, Terry, in Nebraska. Terry, what's going on?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to tell you, first of all, I've seen 5 craft in my lifetime that are pretty much unexplainable, with the exception of 2. I've seen a pair of the 2 triangles, black triangles, and they were very close. Now, I'm going to give you a theory, and then I'll take your comments on the radio. Say, for example, the U.S. government or another government in the world has either been given or captured the technology to create these on their own. They put them over the roadways in their own country, so they're very visible, many times, many places. They now have the perfect spy machine to go anywhere they want to go in the world, and nobody's going to point the finger at anybody. Thank you, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say. Thank you.
I'll tell you what. Thank you, Terry, for the question. Tim, if you wouldn't mind, we need to take another break right here. Think about that, and when we come back, I'll give you a chance to answer it.
Okay.
All right. So this is – I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stick around. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. We're talking with Timothy Good, author of Need to Know. Just had a question from Terry in Nebraska. You want to tackle it, Tim?
Now, it's very interesting what Terry is saying, that, you know, is it possible some of these triangular, he claims to have seen 5 craft, including some he can't explain, such as black triangles up close. I mean, I'd like to hear more about that. But before we hear back from him, let me say, I think in theory, it's quite possible that some of these craft are indeed American Black Project top secret aircraft or spacecraft. It becomes a very murky area. We're dealing with things that we're not supposed to know about. But let me quote from earlier on. I mentioned this this extraordinary document, which was only released by Britain's Ministry of Defence last year, which refers to flying triangles which penetrated not just British airspace but 2 Royal Air Force bases. And let me just read the last paragraph of this previously secret document. In summary, there would seem to be some evidence on this occasion that an unidentified object or objects of unknown origin was operating over the UK. Given recent speculation about Aurora by both media and members of Parliament, it is surprising that so far this has not been taken up by the press or again by members of Parliament. If there has been some activity of U.S. origin which is known to a limited circle in the Ministry of Defence and is not being acknowledged, it is difficult to investigate further. So I think that says it all, really. There is consideration then, and that's 1993, quite a long time ago, about penetration by triangular objects. And I'd like to hear more about what you saw, Terry.
Terry's gone. He's listening on the phone. But I'll just add this, Tim. I don't know if you're aware, if you're familiar with what this study that NIDS has done, the National Institute for Discovery Science, which was based in here in Las Vegas and is now inactive. But they've taken a pretty hard look at the Black Triangle sightings. Yeah. And what Terry was saying is pretty accurate. These things have been seen over major cities, over highways, as if whoever is flying them doesn't really care if they're seen by a lot of people.
That's right, yeah, and it's possible. I keep an open mind that some of these are indeed American top secret aircraft and spacecraft. You know that Ben Rich, who was one of the heads of the famous Skunk Works, Lockheed, producing the U-2 and Stealth and so forth, has gone on the record, and I know one of the people who this was told to, and I've written it in the book. I mean, Rich said, we have the technology to go to the stars. And he was very serious about it. He said, we're just lacking a few equations. And this was about at least 10, 12 years ago. He said, we're just lacking a few equations, but we have the technology.
Boy, oh boy. We're going to go now west of the Rockies, Ryan in Vancouver. Ryan?
Hi, how's it going?
Morning.
I'll just make it brief. I got two questions for Nick. How's it going? Did you ever, by any chance, ever work with J. Allen Hynek or Nick Pope? And that's kind of weird because you're speaking of Kelso, Washington. I just live south of there in Vancouver, so it's kind of weird because my grandpa was out here, and he told me about that before he died. But, yeah, I just want to know, and I'll take my answers off the air. I appreciate it.
Ryan, can you tell me who the first person you mentioned?
It said Hynek.
Yeah, Dr. John Hynek. I worked for Project Blue Book from 47 to 69. I'm only 23, but I'm kind of I live in the past, so I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah. I met Alan Hynek. I never worked with him. Nick Pope is a very good friend. I don't work for the government, for any government. I'm completely independent reporter, if you like. But I will tell you something about Alan Hynek, and it's come out in the book, in my new book for the first time, and that is I have very reliable information that in addition to being consultant to the United States Air Force from the 1940s, responsible for debunking nearly all UFO reports, he was also a consultant to the CIA's Office of Scientific Intelligence. All right? And that is in my new book, Need to Know.
Well, take it further. The significance of that being what? That you think he was that he was being directed by CIA to do the debunking?
Obviously.
Yeah. Well, it's entirely possible. But he did change his mind later in life.
We're going to go. Yes, he certainly did. He did some very good work. I mean, the Hynek UFO report is got some terrific stuff in it. I've cited it in my book. I think that started off with the famous Dexter, Michigan things in 1965, when he became known as Old Swamp Gas for explaining away the sightings at the girls' college, as possibly due to swamp gas. And, the Air Force got so much flack out of that that they had to change their tune, and Hynek became much more conciliatory and, of course, started writing books and formed the Center for UFO Studies.
Okay, Brian, thank you for the question. We're going to go now to our wild card one line, Dale in Montana. Dale, what's on your mind?
Well, hello there. I just have a couple of questions here. I was just asking, Tim, have you ever heard about a crash in Aztec, New Mexico?
I've written a whole chapter on it, Dale.
Oh,
in my
new
book.
Okay, I've got a book from William Bill Steinman.
I've got the one, too. It's very, very good.
Yes, and also, too, on the Four Corners up there, by friends and relatives that worked in the Air Force in the 40s, they said they were experimenting with radar equipment in the Four Corners.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've got all the technical details about that particular radar site. And basically, I mean, the Aztec case I think it was March of 1948 was actually far more important than Roswell. The craft was there was a craft which was in almost perfect condition.
Yes, I have a date of 7/7 of 48.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. And it was about 100 feet in diameter, and, there was tons of scientific data extracted from that retrieval, much more important than Roswell.
Yeah, I'm just really curious because I've never heard of anybody talking about the radar and around the four corners and all the spacecraft that have been falling out of the sky because of the radar.
Yeah.
And the military had got so many of them, they started burying them in and dumping them in old mine shafts around in the four corners area.
Yeah, right. Scott Ramsey has done a great deal of work on that, as has my friend John Andy Kistner. And I think I've got the details here from them, like the 767th Aircraft Control and Warning System radar unit was based up that actually traced the craft. And there were other radar sites that probably, you know, as they say, probably the most powerful radar sets in the world at that time, requiring very elaborate safety precautions.
So, you know, Tim, there are those who theorize that the radar had something to do with bringing down some of these craft.
Interfering the controlling mechanism of the craft. I think that's quite possible. I think it's quite possible.
Hey, Dale, thank you very much. We're going to go to Pete in one of my favorite cities in the world, Nashville. Pete, what's on your mind?
Hi, George. Good evening.
Good evening.
I was wondering how long all this stuff's going to keep going on before somebody can actually get our government or UFO land to, I guess, inform everybody. It seems like we're the only ones in the dark. Our governments kind of toss it back and forth.
Yeah.
Like Area 51. Recently, you know, when they was hunting for Stephen Fawcett, you know, they found like six crashed aircraft. Mm-hmm. And about a year ago, Art Bell had an interview with somebody called in and was doing a flyover over Area 51. And it was a crazy call, and he started reporting how they were being shot at and everything. And Art was trying to advise the guy not to go in there. Then all of a sudden he disappeared. And, like, this aircraft, all these aircraft they found out in the desert there, one of them could be his. How long is all this just going to keep going on before somebody let something out?
I don't know. I'd like to say two things, though, Pete. First of all, when we talk about governments covering up, we're talking about a fraction of people in governments who actually know what's going on. Believe me, it is such a sensitive matter that only those with need to know will find out something about it. And even then, it's all compartmented. So you're talking about, if you like, an inner government or a cabal. It's nothing less than that, in my opinion. And secondly, about I think it was about 5 years ago, I asked a friend of mine in Washington how long it's going to be. I mean, he knows that I've been studying this subject for since 1955, actually. And I said, you know, how long is it going to be before this sort of stuff's going to come out? And he just said two words to me, laughing. He said, "Stay healthy." So, you know, that was 5 years ago, and I think it's been pointed out to me on several occasions. It has to be gradual, and even then, are we going to get the full truth? I very much doubt it. Do the aliens want us to know what they're doing here? Do you really think so? I think in some cases, absolutely, some of them might. We have allies, put it that way. There are people out there who look compassionately at the human race, but there are others who are more interested in what their own needs. I'm quite sure of that.
You know, Tim, that there are those who believe, and some indications, that perhaps the technology, the secrets, have been taken out of government, out of the purview, put into private hands as a further buffer between you know, the truth and us being ever finding it out. What do you take on that?
I think it's more than likely, George, quite frankly. There's got to be some sort of corporate and individual sponsors involved in all this that are anxious to protect the status quo.
All right. Well, Pete in Nashville, thanks for that call. Good calls. Good calls tonight, Coast to Coast AM listeners. I'm George Knapp. We'll be back in a moment with more of Tim Good and more of Coast to Coast AM. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us. It's been a fascinating couple of hours with Tim Good, the author of the new book, Need to Know, UFOs, the Military, and Intelligence. And Coast to Coast listeners, you're coming through with some mighty fine questions this morning. We're going to go now to our wild card line, Larry in Montana. Larry, you're on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, how are you? Good evening.
Okay.
Good morning, I'm sorry. I had a question about Dr. Brown's fear that was found. It's a quartz crystal sphere that was found in 1970 off of the coast of Bimini. And I feel that it is the key to cheap, free energy and how the pyramids were built. And I wondered if you or your guest knew anything about the sphere and where it might be located today, and how come that the only object that was not from this world because of its characteristics and because of its 10,000ths of an inch specifications couldn't be built in 1970 with our greatest technology. And I will take the answer off the air. And I want to tell you that I really appreciate the integrity and the focus that y'all are showing in the show.
Well, thanks, Larry. You've stumped me. I don't know anything about this sphere. Tim, does that ring a bell with you?
It's out of my sphere, too, George. I haven't the faintest idea about this thing at all.
Larry, we're sorry we can't answer that, but maybe that's something we're going to have to look into and maybe delve into it on a future show. We're going to go to our first-time caller line, Ed in Wisconsin. You're up kind of early this morning, Ed. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Thank you. In your opinion, is it possible that some kind of understanding has been reached between officers in the United States government and one or more extraterrestrial powers?
Yes.
Understanding that might have to be disclosed if there were a congressional investigation.
Yes, to both. That's my opinion.
No, you don't care to elaborate, or?
Well, I mean, he's right. There has indeed been some kind of understanding, obviously established since we are that there is a liaison program. Of that, I know to be a fact. There is a liaison program involving a few military and scientific intelligence personnel who liaise with a certain group of ETs. And it's been going on for quite a long time. I don't know a great... Well, I have actually published quite a bit. I've gained some information that there are bases on our planet, many of them, and that some of them have been here for a very long time. In fact, one of the theories in my book that I sort of lean towards is that some aliens have been on this planet for longer than we have. And if there were to be any closed hearings, this possibly might be disclosed, but Congress is not really in any kind of control of the situation, whatever information is given to them.
Thanks for that call, Ed. Tim, tell me this. Do you, I can't remember if it's in this book or a previous book, the discussion about Eisenhower meeting face-to-face with these guys at an Air Force base in Southern California?
I've elaborated on that due to a little, you know, I've got a few more names of individuals involved in that case. This is February 1954 at Edwards Air Force Base. When Eisenhower allegedly, there was an arranged meeting. Several craft actually landed at Edwards Air Force Base, and Eisenhower was there with some aides, and names are mentioned. And apparently, one of the things that they did was to demonstrate their superior technology by making themselves invisible or their craft, which caused Eisenhower considerable embarrassment. And he said, hey, guys, I don't think we're ready for all this. They apparently, these particular aliens, were very human appearing, apart from their remarkable abilities.
You know, it's always occurred to me that wouldn't happen now. I mean, the Secret Service wouldn't allow the president to go meet face-to-face with some potentially dangerous adversaries, would he? Would they?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, George. But I do think that meeting did actually take place. There is certainly some evidence for it, and a lot of named people were involved in that, both military and from the civilian world, like Archbishop McIntyre of Los Angeles.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phones right now. Sonny in Arkansas, you're on Coast to Coast AM.
Great show tonight. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Tim.
Yeah.
We met briefly in Eureka Springs last year.
Oh, good. I hope you're coming next April.
Great. Well, that was going to be one of my questions. I'm glad you had the best presentation there, I thought.
Oh, thank you very much indeed.
I'm wondering, you were talking about the Secret Service and the President a minute ago. Do you think that the President Truman was hustled out of the White House in 1952 or into the bunkers underneath it? I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I'm sorry.
I wondered if anybody had ever heard anything about that.
I'm sure he would have been. I honestly don't know.
That'd be an interesting subject for a FOIA request, wouldn't it? If there had been any incident like that, whether or not those files had been cleaned out or not.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's an interesting thought. Anything else, Sonny?
No, that's it.
All right. Thank you for the call. We're going to take our last break, and then we'll be back with more questions for Tim Good before we call it an evening here. So stick around. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. It's been a lot of fun speaking with Tim Good, author of the new book, Need to Know. You've been asking some great questions. We got a couple of minutes left and a couple of more callers on the line. We're going to go to Bogey in Brentwood, California on the wildcard line. Bogey, good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Amazing show. I'll be reading off a piece of paper. Seem to take it for granted that we're being visited, and I have no problem with that. But even with our science, we know that the energy required to achieve any kind of interstellar travel or bending of the space and time, is it really possible for living beings or beings that are perishable, which have a limited amount of lifespan, for them to travel here? Or would we be looking at something that they call the Van Neumann probes, which is a sort of self-replicating artificial intelligence that time doesn't really matter for it, and they could travel with our shuttle, and they'll still get to the end of the galaxy, even in billions of years, but they don't. There is no life involved in that. Could you comment on something?
Bogey, the only thing I can comment on is that aliens, if we have to believe their communications with us, and thousands of people, I believe, have had communication contacts with alien beings, they say that their technology is so advanced that they can manipulate space and time, or, as Einstein called it, space-time, since both are inextricably linked. And there's a lovely story I've got in my last book, Unearthly Disclosure, of Enrique Castillo, South American contactee who was taken on board a craft, and he was puzzling. He said, "You come from where?" And it was some distant part of the galaxy. And he said, "When did you leave?" And they said, "Oh, we just left." So I think it's possible that some of them at least have developed virtually instantaneous travel whereby they can fold time and space. So there's no linear travel as such. You know, they don't use rockets or propellers or anything comparable to what we have, or at least, it's possible we are developing it. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, Bogey, very reasonable questions and very understandable questions. You look at some of the cutting-edge research taking place now in quantum theory and things of that sort, and I think we're reaching the point where we realize that this kind of travel, timeless travel in essence, is in fact possible. I remember, and you do too, Tim, Bob Lazar, when he talked about the craft out there, he talked about folding space and time. I know a lot of people don't give him much credibility, but the system that he described is now considered to be feasible.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bogey, thank you for that call. We're going to go to Dan in Temecula. What's on your mind, Dan?
Yeah, Mr. Good, I was curious about something. I read a book several years ago. It's been quite a few years ago. Referenced an author by the name of George Adamski.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you have any exposure to any of his writings and what your opinion would be on his works, if you've had or have read.
I'm glad you raised that question, Dan. First of all, I co-authored a book on George Adamski. There are no copies available. There may be something on the internet. Go to my website, which is timothygood.co.uk. That's timothygood.co.uk. And go to books, and you can see the book there. I studied Adamski's claims for many, many years, and I think that he was absolutely on the level about many of his claims, and he did ride on board the spaceships. And I've written in a number of books, including the latest one, Need to Know, that he indeed did have contact with extraterrestrials, and I've reproduced a frame from the last film that he took of UFOs in a suburb of Washington in 1965, which I was told at the Pentagon in 1998 when I was invited by the director of the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, which at that time handled the unmanned spy planes. I was told that, in his opinion, that film was genuine. He couldn't see how it had been faked. I showed him various frames from it.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, Tim, here's a question I had. I've had an ongoing interest in the animal mutilation cases, mostly cattle, but a lot of different kind of animals.
Yeah, me too.
Are they occurring in Europe at all?
Well, I read reports, George, but I'm skeptical of most of them. I have to say, not all, but most of them, I think, are not the real thing. They don't have the classic hallmarks. I think, in general, it is restricted to the Americas, South America, Central America, and North America, including Canada, of course.
And what's your guess on it? Is it some other intelligence doing a sampling project,
yes,
or is it us, or is it both?
I don't think it's us. I mean, this has been going on since the late 1950s, according to Colonel Corso. I don't think we have the technology. I mean, various people have tried to assure me that the Air Force is doing this, you know, and I had one of my sources say, oh, yes, it's the Air Force. It's done with helicopters. And I said, well, you know, how long does this operation take? And they said 12.5 minutes. I mean, there you are. Usually it's done instantaneously, and there's no trace. And as you know perfectly well, there's no blood around. There's no way that if it was done by humans that it wouldn't be spotted.
And what do you think that they're looking for? You have any guesses?
Genetic material. I think definitely they need genetic material. Perhaps it's to do with the hybrid. I think there is a hybridization program. And if that's the case, the question is it for their benefit or for ours?
We got Dan in New York on the wild card line. Dan, what's up?
I'm there.
Hello? Yeah, hello. Good morning.
Am I on?
Yes, you are, Dan. Good morning. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, my goodness, that was fast. And I wanted to ask Timothy Good, what did you exactly meant about Philip Corso, about the back engineer technology? Because I have a powerful interest in the fact that the government did reverse engineer technology from the extraterrestrial crafts, because Philip Corso actually wasn't the only one that said it. There was a CIA informant, a CIA contractor, Don Phillips, part of the Disclosure Project. Stanton Friedman also mentioned the transistor. Mm-hmm. Back to Don Phillips, he mentioned several devices, as opposed to Corso mentions about 14.
Okay.
But, the other guy mentioned, someone else, Kevin Randall mentioned fiber optics.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go ahead and speak.
Well, I think it's true that definitely. I mean, that you know that we have inherited some of these materials and have passed them into the corporate giants, if you like, since the 1960s.
Dan, does that answer your question?
Oh, I think it is.
I could go further. Can you be a bit more specific, Don, in your question?
Well, what I meant was it sounded almost a while back there when I listened to you about 10 to 4,
yeah,
about an hour ago. It sounded like that you were dismissing what Corso said.
On the contrary. On the contrary. Not at all. I only said that he was not happy with the way it appeared in the book. Don't forget, he didn't actually write the final draft of the book. He just he told a scientist friend of mine that it wasn't true, because people have come forward, the scientists who were working on these various things, like fiber optics, have come forward and said, well, hey, you know, I was working on that at that time. What Corso actually said to a scientist friend of mine was that when the various industries working on these projects, scientists and so forth, were working on something, we came forward with the material that was sort of kind of related to the project, which would advance their project. So,
well, kind of related, of course, as you know, isn't exact. So perhaps what the government did back engineer from the alien technology wasn't exactly what the government was working on to begin with. Do you agree on that?
That's quite possible, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Timothy, it's great to talk with you. God bless you. And, George, keep up the good work.
Thanks, Dan. You know, thank you. You know, earlier you had to gloss over this, but you mentioned something, and it's in your book about a so-called Z division. Could you explain what that is? And do you believe that was sort of the repository for a study of all this material at some point?
I do indeed. In fact, it was the Z division.
was started. It was started by Robert Oppenheimer. He was one of the first. It was created in July 1945, and it was named after a guy called Gerald Zacharias, who was a physics professor at MIT. And he led the division until October, and then it was taken over by various people. But it was primarily to improve the ordnance design and sort of security of the first atomic bombs. It was explained to me by Sandia Laboratories' historian, and it was organized into several groups or compartments, including Z-12, which was called the Manual Preparation Group. And they dealt, according to my information, a branch of the division was dealt with the subject, because all the people that were dealing with the top secret, above top secret UFO situation at that time were mostly in the nuclear physics area.
And so you think that this...
It evolved there. It started there at that time.
And do you think that these guys carried on the study of the UFO phenomena for some time, or may have been responsible for analyzing?
It all started, I think, you know, everything was humming and buzzing in New Mexico in 1945, following the first explosion of the atomic bomb there. And then, of course, other developments in the nuclear field. And this is what got the UFOs excited. And all the original top secret, above top secret research was centered in Los Alamos and elsewhere in White Sands and elsewhere in New Mexico.
You know, there's one other thing in your book that I wanted to talk about while we've got just a minute or so left. It's a one-line thing that, where you talked about the discussion of aliens being responsible for warming the water of our oceans as one of the types of threats.
This is what I was told by one of my contacts. I have a whole chapter in my previous book, but I have reiterated some of it in Need to Know. I've been told that aliens have long established bases here, and that various elements of the military and intelligence community, scientific intelligence community, are liaising with some of these people. And our people were very concerned that the alien activity in some of the Earth's oceans, such as the Pacific Ocean, was contributing towards a warming of the waters, as it was put to me, and this was a cause for grave concern. Also, there was concern, I was told, about the manipulation of tectonic plates by the aliens. For what purpose, I don't know, but this was a cause of grave concern to those few who are liaising with the aliens.
Wouldn't that be something if aliens were responsible for the phenomena that we see as global warming?
It puts a new angle on things, doesn't it? I think that the activity of the sun is being overlooked, actually, quite seriously. I think the sun, there are going to be changes on our sun, which probably are also contributing towards. I mean, you know, I believe the Martian ice caps are melting. I've read that, you know, and I don't think human beings... I've got anything to do with that.
We got about 30 seconds, Tim. You and I started this conversation talking about, you know, what does it all mean? Do you have any advice for regular people? I mean, you know, we're all interested in this topic, but it doesn't seem to make much difference in our everyday life. You know,
it's completely irrelevant to the majority of people. But I think as time goes by and we appreciate these things, and it will become very, very relevant indeed. As one person in a certain government told me, it is the most important subject facing this planet.
Tim Good.
I don't know all the reasons for that, but I certainly know some of them. And if people in high places are saying that, then we're going to be paying attention to it.
Timothy Good, author of Need to Know, thank you. This book is now available on Amazon.com. If you're interested, it probably should be in your local bookstore soon. It's been a fascinating couple of hours. Thanks for all the great calls, everyone. Thanks to John Lear and, of course, to the Coast to Coast team. I'm George Knapp, and I'll see you next month, everyone.